You know, life is all about expression. You only live once and you're not coming back. So express yourself,
Express yourself. You gotta be you and only you, babe. Express yourself and let me be me. Express yourself.
Welcome to episode 130, the Black Excellence Extravaganza. My name is Sojo, and I am joined by my two lovely co-hosts, Miss Think Pretty Smart and Lady Buddha. How are you ladies doing this evening?
Pretty good.
I am exhausted, per usual, sleeping issues, so I'm barely awake.
And you just walked in the door too, right?
Absolutely. Well, I did get home a little bit earlier today because we had bad weather, so half of the D.C. metropolitan area didn't go to work or school, so that
works.
Y'all
start later? Because I saw some people starting later.
Yeah, they had a two-hour delay, and then OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, whatever, put out a three-hour delay, but none of those things impacted my start on time.
Oh, dang. Mm-hmm. Well, did either of you have a chance to fix a beverage or anything like that?
Mm-mm, because I don't want to have a beverage mess up my plan of taking a sleeping pill, or sleeping pills, rather, maybe 15 minutes before we're done so I can be knocked out.
Oh, yeah, see, that might not end well for you.
Right. You know, we all know how you try and kill me, so I don't...
See, all these lies you keep spreading the podcast universe. Buddha, what about you?
I have a nice tall bottle of water and a nice short glass of Grand Marnier and orange juice.
Mm.
You've been liking that Grand Marnier lately.
Well, you know, when you get a whole bottle, you gotta, you know, get to the bottom of it. I'm almost there.
Well, I'm actually off this week, which is great, but I have not been partaking in any beverages. I just have water, and I started, what do you call it, grating ginger.
Yeah.
Putting it like in a little tea seeper or whatever, and putting it in the water. And I didn't know, is it supposed to fizzle?
It doesn't when I put ginger in there, but I don't really grate the ginger. I just put a big, nice chunk in there.
And that's what I usually do, is put the chunk, but I started grating it yesterday, and I put it in like late last night, and I woke up this morning and I kept hearing something buzz, and I was a little bit afraid because I was like, please don't let there be a bug in my room. And then I noticed like it was the bottle of water that was kind of like fizzing, so I don't know if it was supposed to do that or not, but the ginger water actually is really good when you grate the ginger, so... That's what I have right now. Okay, so I have been chilling all day, watching Twitter.
Lord. When I told you to watch The Walking Dead, I mean...
I know, I still haven't had a chance to watch
instructions.
It. But there was so much going on. And we might get into that, we might not. But before we do, Buddha, did you have a chance to pull up our feedback? We did get an email from Lennon Brothers. Did you get a chance to...
I did not.
I have it pulled up. I can read it. I wasn't sure because I forgot to tell you. Okay. Mm-hmm. You guys can also leave us feedback at our email address, which is feedback@whiskeywineandmoonshine.com. You can also tweet us, Facebook us, and do all that good stuff. You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, not Stitcher, because Stitcher is acting like a punk. Even though I think they're back, but they still don't know.
Yeah, they're back up, but they were definitely down for a minute.
For a long time.
Yeah, days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the website, like online, like with your computer, I think that's still down, the desktop.
And I know if you're an Android user, they said that you have to update the app, because I ended up installing and then reinstalling it last night. But since Stitcher is being a punk, you guys can definitely leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. But you can also, like Leonard Brothers did, email us at feedback@whiskeywineandmoonshine.com. He said, "Hey, booze, I'm sitting here listening to the Ebony Love episode, and I'm on the part where you're talking about the color of love. As I tweeted to you, I think that love can be whatever color or colors a person wants it to be based on their definition and experience with love. This speaks to Buddha's point that all colors are or can be love. As Sojo said, one of the most important things to learn through love is that there's always something more to learn. We're constantly learning and growing as people and in how we express and accept love. And as Smart said, each person loves differently. So we have to recognize that and handle it in its many forms. I think that it's important to say and express love in many ways. It can be through support, prayer, listening, giving advice, and many other words and actions. Love should be genuine and nurturing. Anyway, just wanted to drop this line while it was still fresh on my mind. All right, that's it for now. Back to listening and live tweeting the episode.
And wow.
Yes, I was Leonard Brothers, L Brothers Media from the Look and Listen podcast, who does a great job live tweeting.
And mix his podcasts that are like mixtapes. They are really good. If you want to like get your corporate or, you know, whatever cheer dance on during the day, hit him up because he's got some bangers.
Wow. That was nice.
That was. But so do y'all want to talk about Twitter, or do y'all want to get into the Black Excellence extravaganza? Because there's so much.
I don't know if it's going to be an extravaganza, but I'm choosing to be highbrow.
For once.
You know what? Don't do that.
Well, we are exactly halfway through Black History Month, which I started affectionately hashtagging as Melanin on Fleek Month. And we were thinking, what better way to celebrate it than kind of getting into like our top 10, maybe more, maybe less, like Black excellence expressions. So we can kind of just, I guess, round table it. I mean, we all have maybe like three or four of our faves, and we can kind of just go down the list until we run out of time. So I think.
Or run out of them, I mean.
Right.
Other.
Well, let's do it like whiskey, wine, moonshine. So let's start with you, Buddha. What's one of your Black excellence faves this month? Or this year, because we said in 2016.
We said 2016, and the one that's foremost on my mind is Marley Diaz. I gave her my cheers a few episodes back because she was the 11-year-old who wanted to get 1,000 Black girl books because she was tired of reading about white boys and their dogs. Mm-hmm. Her mom was like, what is it that you want to do? And she said she wants to do this book drive. So at the time I gave her a cheers, and I didn't know whether she, you know, how quickly she would get to her goal, but she did get to her goal earlier this month. So, you know, that just really stood out to me. Besides the fact that, you know, she had this initiative, but she recognized something that I have to admit, I was a young reader, a voracious reader, and I didn't really spend a lot of time thinking about who was missing or did I see myself or not, because right. I was so into the fiction. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I became a more mature reader in recent years that I started to seek myself out or representations of, you know, me more in literature. But at that time, I wouldn't have noticed it, at least, or I didn't notice it. So the fact that, number one, she recognized that she didn't see herself, that she wanted to see more of herself, that she had a plan and a strategy for how she could, you know, make some change in the world, that she had the support to be able to do it, and that people rallied to support her. Like, all those things coming together, that's a powerful life in a small body. So
it sure is, for her to just be in sixth grade, like, and then to be able to, because I think she got, like, Barnes & Nobles and I think a couple of other, like, bookstores to actually donate.
Mm-hmm.
So she really, like, you know, and like you said, when I was younger, I mean, I read, I don't know, Little House on the Prairie,
Sweet Caroline, Judy Bloom, everybody.
Judy Bloom, Babysitters. So, I mean, you know, all that stuff, but I didn't think.
Sweet Valley High.
Yes.
Sweet Valley High was a shit.
Every Sweet Valley High book.
Yeah. Although I did notice that they talked about one of the twins had alabaster skin, and I always thought that was very strange. Mm-hmm. Or being translucent was thought of as something positive, and I also thought that was strange. I was like, wow, that they sound sick, but the rest of this is awesome.
Right. Well, for her to just, you know, to even think about that, because she's actually one of the ones that I chose too, because I saw she met the goal. But I, you know, I was very proud of her for doing that at such a young age. I saw a quote, it's by Brian Hill. It says, seeing reflections of yourself in the fiction you love is one of the most powerful forms of affirmation we have in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's from, you know, like an article, Why Diversity Matters to All of Us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know, about books and youth, it's funny because I never read Judy Blume, Babysitter's Club, and I remember reading a lot. The only one I remember off top was Sweet Valley High, and mm-hmm. I have a recollection of one of my teachers, and I'll say her name, Willie B. Gibson, saying, you know, all the girls had these books, and, all, you know, we just had a bunch of books, and I remember one of the things she impressed upon us was before you read a book, find out about its author.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was reading, you know, Sweet Valley High, that always stuck with me. Like, not only the author, but look at the cover. These girls don't look like me.
Right.
And that's just, I think that's something that a lot of, well, children and adults need to learn, whether it's fiction, whether it's, you know, supposedly a fact-based piece or whatever it is, you should know the perspective of the author, because often that'll tell you how they're going to how the narrative's going to go, and it's going to shape how they present facts if it is a research-based book,
or shape characters when they're
exactly
when they have a character in mind. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, we talk a lot about why diversity matters, and then, you know, we talk about representation and seeing ourselves, but it's equally important for people who are not ourselves to have a lot of different ways to see us as well, and to mm-hmm. counteract some of the images that might be there, or in places where there's not a lot of black people or a lot of, you know, different groups, to see them reflected in literature too, because that might be your only opportunity to interact with someone who is not like you in a lot of different ways. So it's important for a lot of people. It's also a good challenge for librarians. This has kind of been an ongoing thing where, you know, the majority of teachers and librarians across the country, at the school level, you know, are white women, and mm-hmm. we have outdated collections for all kinds of reasons, and to highlight this issue makes it important for them to work to diversify their collections on purpose.
And actively, exactly.
Yeah,
actively
seeking book out here and there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would also challenge parents. I know we have talked. Oh my God, and it's escaping me right now. We talked about it over on the Interracial John about the book oh God, what is the guy's name? The president, somebody bakes a cake for George Washington's birthday or whatever. And and the book being, you know, taken out of circulation.
Yeah.
It's very important, I think, you know, for parents to know what their kids are reading. Because I've seen a lot of parents, parents and educators get upset with things like Little Tommy Has Two Daddies, but they don't know that stuff like,
slaves were very happy to make.
Exactly. So, for all you guys out there, parenting is a 24/7 job. Stop slacking.
Mm-hmm. She was on a nightly show with Larry Wilmore, and she mm-hmm. said herself, when asked why the cause was important to her, she mm-hmm. said, when you read a story about a person you connect with, like, well, you host a TV show, so if you were to read a book about a black man who hosts a TV show, you would remember whatever he learned and use it on the show. So I like the fact that she connected it mm-hmm. to the host. Like, you know, and was also saying, basically making those connections. I like that she was even able to verbalize why she wanted to do that to adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Let me just back up and say that the book was called A Birthday Cake for George Washington by Ramin Ganeshram, and there's been a whole bunch of fallout. She actually wrote something on Huffington Post that was basically yada, 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 poor me. It's the illustrator's fault, yada, yada, yada. And as best I can tell, I can still purchase this item from Amazon.
Yeah, she's not gonna stop selling it.
Well, no, she's not selling it. It's the publisher who said that they were gonna stop selling it.
The last.
So, yeah,
that's the Hercules book. It was Hercules.
So yeah. Okay, smart. What's your moment of black excellence?
Oh, my moment of black excellence. Let me see. There. I mean, this has been a stellar Black History Month. It just. All in itself. So on February 1, the New York Times did an article. It was called Meet the New Student Activists. Mm-hmm. All great, all fine. There was a pair of kids on there that I could have done without, but that's neither here nor there. I want to focus specifically on David Turner's clapback because he was one of the young people featured. And he basically, you know, the piece came out, and he was not necessarily pleased with how it came out because he felt that there was an erasure of black women in the New York Times article. And he went on Facebook and he wrote a lengthy bit about how he made these suggestions. And they said they, you know, basically they already had enough black women. And as it would turn out, when everything was published, I think it was more black men than black women. So I did appreciate his conscientiousness. Mm-hmm. At the time, to expect that, you know, black women would be, you know, definitely included to a large extent within this piece, and then his willingness to be like, no, I told them, and they still decided to do X, Y, and Z. So yeah, go David Turner, and that happened on February 1st, kicking off Black History Month.
I like that because a lot of times, you know, when you get shine, sometimes you, you know, you bask in that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely shout out to him. And what's the name of the article again? Meet the
New Student Activists. And it's a New York Times piece. It's still online because I did click the link earlier today.
Okay, cool. I guess my first one is because I did have Marley Diaz too. I wanted to give a shout out to Debbie Allen and the Alvin Ailey Dancers.
That was mine too.
Oh, we got each other's. Visiting the White House for their Black History Month event. Basically, Michelle Obama she did an event where she had 51 black dancers where they came to the White House for a Black History Month celebration. And if you want to see some of the pictures and videos from the event, the hashtag on Instagram and Twitter is Dance at the White House. But basically what was going on was that she had, like, there was Debbie Allen was teaching an African dance class. You have Fatima Robinson. She was doing hip hop. You had ballet being taught. I mean, just all these different rooms. And it wasn't just that event that I wanted to highlight and just shout out for black excellence, but also just, you know, a shout out to Michelle Obama, who we are all going to truly miss, you know, when the Obamas leave office, because, you know, the first lady's job is supposed to be like the official hostess of the White House. And you know how, like, a woman's job is to make a house a home, kind of. And Jackie Kennedy Onassis became known and adored for, like, transforming the White House into Camelot, you know, and all that stuff. But I feel like Michelle Obama is going to be also remembered as transformative, because I remember when she first took office, do y'all remember how reluctant she was?
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, she was almost like, I kind of wanted to stay home. And in the beginning, everything she did was screwed.
She didn't want to stay home. They actually had to tell her, no, that's going to look crazy. You actually have to move right now, not later.
Right, exactly. And then when she got there, everything she did, the way she dressed, whatever she said, it was always scrutinized and criticized. And at first, she did seem uncomfortable with it, but it's like she embraced the role and kind of made it, like, uniquely hers in such a way that, like, it's unapologetically black. It's cultural. It's all of those things. So yeah, that was.
Well, it's funny because I saw those pictures and I love them, but I had a similar kind of moment of black excellence in general, just about the fact that they held true to their declaration to make the White House the people's house. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that, you know, they really wanted to make sure that it was the people's house. And there's a quote on the White House website that says, this is really what the White House is all about. It's the people's house. quote unquote. It's a place that is steeped in history, but it's also a place where everyone should feel welcome. And that's why my husband and I have made it our mission to open up the house to as many people as we can. And so they have all of these events, and it's so funny because I have never known so many people that I know personally who have been to the White House.
Right.
Like every time I turn around, there's some big event and there's some FAMUans there, or there's some Atlantans there, or there's someone who is connected to me through, you know, fewer than 6 degrees of separation at the White House itself. Or you can look on their Instagram and you see all these beautiful pictures of these brown people, and, you know, Stevie Wonder is singing over here, Kendrick Lamar is posing over there, mm-hmm. the little boy is rubbing the president's hair saying, is your hair like mine? Like, that's an iconic photograph, but I think it just represents their commitment to making sure that they didn't just go to the White House, we all went.
Mm-hmm.
They lived it for real, as opposed to just selling the idea of it.
Right.
And it's not separate from us. Like, it's not, I mean, I know the White House is supposed to be the White House, but it's like, it's America, so it should be our house.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that now.
It feels like that. It feels welcoming, inviting.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, some people would argue that that kind of goes against the White House, that it was supposed to be this imposing thing and to, you know, kind of show you this home court advantage of this, you know, grandiose thing. But at the same time, you represent us.
Mm-hmm.
That's our house, too. So mm-hmm. we shouldn't also feel, alienated from the White House, like right. maybe want visitors to feel a certain kind of way, because we're not visitors.
It's still reverence. I mean, we're not rolling up in flip flops, barbecuing on the.
We're not, but we are dabbing. We are dabbing at the White House. I did see the kids dab there, right in front of the picture of George Washington. That was pretty funny.
Well, Michelle Obama turn up and and dabs herself. So
yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Booty, you got another one?
Yes. I have a couple more, but the one that I'm thinking of right now is the mayor of Flint, Dr. Karen Weaver,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, ran to help fix the problems in Flint and has been an outspoken advocate on behalf of her people. She is not shy to get in front of a mic and tell you what the next round of decisions is going to be. And she, you know, declared that state of emergency so money could start flowing into her community. She talks to nearby areas to try to get ideas for how they can help really be effective in solving the problem. So while it's a shame that it's an ongoing problem, and it's a bigger shame that the problem exists in the first place, it's truly a moment of Black excellence that Karen is there, or Dr. Weaver is there, to help save the day.
Mm-hmm. Isn't she their first female mayor as well, I think?
I think I saw that
she's like the first woman mayor of Flint.
I don't know. I know she is a lifelong resident. But, you know, she's a product of that community. Mm-hmm. You know, she went on to get her PhD from a local university, and she's just done a lot of things there. She's a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority. You know, so, yeah.
You said, you know, so.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm saying, you know, like, she's doing doing the work, you know. She's in an organization. Mm-hmm. She's kind of, you know, she's one of us, basically. She's a regular Black girl doing Black girl magic and being awesome.
Right. I just saw this thing about what she thinks about the governor's apology. Hold on.
Oh, what is that?
Okay, she said... she basically just says she feels the state is ultimately responsible. She says she's waiting on the investigation to say who knew. This is back in January, to say who knew what and when. She says, I'm going to let that play out. And when it does, I think that it just won't have the governor's name on it. There'll be enough blame to go all the way around. But mm-hmm. we know the buck stops with the governor, because, you know, the governor was playing ping pong,
mm-hmm.
you know, with everything. And she even said nearly 2 years ago, when she heard that they were switching the water source of the Flint River, she immediately stopped drinking the tap water. She made a conscious decision, and her husband did too, and that the residents have been speaking out ever since that switch was made. She said they marched, the pastors got together, but nothing happened until the Virginia Tech researchers came in and tested the water. That alone took a year. Why did it take? I mean, she just goes on and on and on. So, you know, she was definitely connected to the community, you know, not just someone who said, okay, I'm coming here to run for office.
Yeah, she's not a savior swooping in and save y'all. This is my house.
Right, right. This is my community.
Yeah, I got to take care of it. If nobody else is going to stand up, I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to stand up and do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from here. I live here. This is me. Yeah.
All right. Dr. Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Weaver. Okay.
Smart. Give us some more excellence.
My excellence is actually twofold, so I will put them together because they're both based on food. The first is Toni Tipton Martin. She wrote the Jemima Code, Two Centuries of African American Cookbooks.
Yeah.
And then the other is... where is it? The other is a guy named Michael Twitty. He is also, I don't want to say like a food, well, maybe a food historian, I guess. He has a blog called Afro Culinarian. He did go to Howard, and both of them have pretty much dedicated their lives to giving credit where credit is due with regard to cuisine that is, well, Black or from the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about him is that he doesn't just say, oh, well, this is African food. He breaks it down to the country and, you know, to why. Ooh. He's also Jewish, so he brings that influence to food as well. The thing that really struck me about Ms. Tipton Martin was in saying how few written cookbooks there are from earlier in the century. You know, it's just, and I never even considered whether, well, not early in the century, actually, I mean, the 1800s, I never even considered whether or not there were any existing cookbooks back then because my old grandmother and all the women in my family don't use them.
Right. I was just thinking that when you said that, I was just, I have a vivid memory of before my grandmother passed, having this obsession with her telling me mm-hmm. how she made everything because she didn't write anything down. Now, they had a church cookbook
mm-hmm.
that they sold, you know, to raise money for the church where, you know, ladies would pass their cake recipes or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But she never wrote down anything, and she would just be like, you know, my aunt said this, and you know, this, and I'm writing down. Okay, grandma, what'd you say? A pinch of what?
Right.
You know, so you're right. Like those were actually oral traditions, and also being in the kitchen with, you know, with your elders while they were cooking and learning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the other thing, like again, with regard to the cookbooks, I mean, I was led to believe that most people were not supposed to read back. Most Black people weren't supposed to be doing too much reading back in those days. So how did these things get, you know, put on paper? Not only that, but I mean, my grandmother, who's still very much alive, both of them, well, my grandmother on my mother's side, she can measure a perfect cup in her hand.
Girl!
So, I mean, it never even occurred to me that there were cookbooks from back then.
Right. Like, they use a fist, they use a...
Right.
Like, just... Because that's why I used to be like, Grandma, how you doing? She'd be like, just your fist, girl, you know? And I'd be like, but mm-hmm. whose fist is bigger than... She's like, shut up, let me just, you know,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Right.
Check those out. The guy, Mr. Twitty, is also the one, I don't know if you guys remember a few years ago, his response to Paula Deen went viral and basically calling her a thief in every way, shape, and form. And she never responded to him. He like invited her to, I guess, cook or whatever. But it was a solid read, and we never heard anything from her. And what's interesting to me about that is that I had heard that she had gotten most of her recipes from Black people anyway. like, known. It was a known thing that she would, you know, she, that over the years she swiped recipes from this person who worked for her and that person who worked for her. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe those people credited them.
Could have.
So that's a I snuck a twosie in there.
I like the food. I guess my next one is going to be the anti-Beyonce rally that actually turned into...
Oh, did they have it?
Oh, no. It turned into the Black Excellence We Are Not Here For Your Shenanigans rally.
Oh, Lord.
Because nobody showed up to the anti-Beyonce rally except us. And we turned it into... I like the hashtag. It was get information, but it was information, not information. You get it, ha-ha. But it was... And it's so funny because I think maybe two people showed up. Like, you know, like 2 hours later, and one of them was like a guy they pulled from off the street. But we showed up in full force, and it was more than, this is what I liked about it, that was so excellent. It was more than a Beyonce love fest. What ended up happening was that it became a revolution. It was, shout us out to Black Lives Matter, Black Love, Black Power, like the signs that they had, the things that they were chanting. I mean, they were talking about police brutality. They were talking about, one of the signs said, where y'all at? I mean, but it was just so much more than, you know, like the, oh, we love Beyonce, so we're going to get out here and do the choreography to, you know, Formation or whatever. It was like, but like I'm looking at some of the signs. It says, no outrage over videos of Eric Garner, Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland, Laquan McDonald, India Kanger, Tamir Rice. You know, but you have outrage at this. It's saying in police brutality and murder, and it says, why are people afraid of Black pride? Mm-hmm. You know, Black love does not mean white hate. I mean, just, you know, all this stuff. So I was just really, 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 like, just so proud of us showing up, you know.
And I'm so tickled. I mean, I really didn't think anybody was going to show up, because what are you really talking about?
I mean, but they had an Eventbrite invitation, and like,
doesn't matter. Like, nobody, like, they didn't have any real grounds. So it's like people woke up this morning and was like,
it was right.
I don't know that. So I think that so often they are allowed to operate with impunity that they really believe that they could go and, you know, protest Beyonce in front of NFL offices and nobody would clap back. Well, those days are gone.
Right.
People got time. You know, a lot of Black folks are unemployed. We got time.
Oh, I didn't even read this whole thing. Okay, it was sponsored by Proud of the Blues.
Mm-hmm,
and it says, we encourage, this is what they said, we encourage anyone and everyone who supports the police to, that's funny because nobody showed up, to show up and march around the block of the NFL headquarters on this day. Be absolutely peace and non-aggressive. Let's show the world that it's not necessary to be disruptive to America while conveying an effective message to the masses. It's been said many times in politics, we campaign in poetry, but we govern in prose. This campaign, so to speak, has been no exception. We got everyone's attention, follows the message we aim to convey with this particular protest, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't make us racist. We disagree with the methods employed and underlying ideologies, not the skin color of those we oppose on these issues. We don't believe these groups should be supported. We are entitled to that opinion, and we should be able to express these views in the form of public protest without fear of threats and intimidation. So they thought we were going to come threatening and intimidating them. Okay.
That's what they would do.
It was asked why we aren't protesting the KKK. Should the KKK ever be honored during a national sports event in front of the largest audience ever, we'll protest that too. Yeah, right. We condemn the KKK and also the actions of the Oregon armed protesters. We do not condone any of that shit. We're proponents of a unified America in which the race factor is only trivial and cultural. We want everyone to prosper. Iron sharpens iron. Be safe and keep it classy, because that's how we do USA. But then they boycott Beyonce, Blue Lives Matter, NFL, you know, all lives matter.
I think it was just a troll. Or a pro Beyonce person
who basically
sat in front of a computer and was like, let me type some things because I have free time and a free website or whatever, and let me just, you know, create an event that doesn't exist, because nobody showed up, not even you, the organizer.
Right.
I think that they intended to show up, but when they realized who they had fucked with,
I don't think they intended to show up. Look, it says the protest Eventbrite creator didn't have a name, Facebook page, or Twitter account until after national news coverage came pouring in. Like, they didn't even name who it was. Like, it's just somebody that just was like, oh, let's all fight back. And it was just some bullshit that went viral. So I think it's hysterical.
I love the way that we were like, nope, if this is happening, we're going to be there. And not make it just entertainment. Like, because it's easy to get behind a celebrity. We all know the Beehive. So it's easy, you know, to say, okay, we're going to, you know, get here and Beyonce. But they were like, no. It's get information and we're going to, you know, do this right. So, and I think Jamila was out there too. They had her like talking to somebody. It was a picture of her talking to like the lone white man. You know? So yeah, it was really cool to see.
Well, just speaking about Beyonce, I'm not sure if you guys saw that crazed bleach blonde broad who, her name is Tommy Lauren, who went into this whole thing about, you know, criticizing Beyonce, bringing up Jay-Z's alleged drug dealing past, because I don't think he's ever been convicted of a crime. Nope. So, and you can't say that just because he's rapping about it is true, because what about The Godfather and all those movies you guys do? Okay. So, she was, what is his name? Charlemagne named her Donkey of the Day.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't like that very much. So she wanted to address him, and he was nice enough to oblige and show up on her show. But what she underestimated was his receipts and his ability to go point for point for point on her. She tried the Black Lives Matter, Black on Black crime defense. She tried, don't bring up what was in the past, to which he hit her with, you brought up Jay-Z's past.
Right.
She tried the, and then they came for me on Twitter, and became the victim. And once I saw her going through the white girl cycle, I stopped watching it, because I knew it would probably end in tears. They probably weren't going to broadcast that. But she was completely unprepared for him to address point for point in facts and use her own words against her. And it was just beautiful. And I say that not even having any love for him at all. You know how I feel about people with speech impediments and then just general ignorance. But it was glorious.
Yeah, I was actually proud of him too, because Charlamagne is hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, he went at her.
Yeah, we're not here for y'all bullshit. I mean, maybe by the end of February, y'all will get it, but...
Which is kind of why, like, that's why I was like, y'all, we should do, like, the Black Excellence, you know, podcast. Because really, so much stuff is popping off daily.
It's daily.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like daily. Like, we're not here for even... I mean, look at Marley Diaz, you know, like, not here for your shit anymore. You know, so that's... It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to see. Booty, you got another one?
Yes. My Black president, Barack Hussein Obama, has been particularly excellent the last couple of days. You know, this weekend we lost Supreme Court Justice Scalia, and immediately people came out with very strange, bizarre political posturings instead of, you know, having some statesman-like conduct. And the president came out with a statement of his own that was very clear and very strong and very measured. But then today he participated in a press conference that I had the opportunity to listen to that was one of the most glorious things I've heard in a while, where, you know, one of the questions kind of asked about Donald Trump, and he ended up really talking about Donald Trump. But he did a nice job in making sure that you knew that it's not Donald Trump alone. Okay, why are you laughing?
Because he did. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He did. It was so beautiful. He was like, but he was in his calm, you know,
presidential
measured way. But, you know, all the things he said about Donald Trump, he then said, you know, that I find it interesting that everybody's focused on Trump primarily just because he says in more interesting ways what the other candidates are saying as well. So he may up the ante in the anti-Muslim sentiment, but if you look at what the other Republican candidates have said, that's pretty troubling too. He may express strong anti-immigration sentiment, but you've heard that from the other candidates as well. They're all denying climate change. I think that's troubling to the international community, since science is in the science on climate change is unequivocal. And, you know, the other countries in the world, they kind of count on the United States being on the side of science and reason and common sense. You know, but then aside from that, then they move into, of course, the discussion about Supreme Court. And he just did a really nice job laying out the fact that, you know, although they're trying to make up an excuse, which is kind of a poor excuse about this idea of we have to wait, you know, a whole 11 months until after the next president is sworn in. Right. He discounted all of that. But he also just made sure you remembered that this is not some sort of special event that they're suddenly stopping because, you know, of election season, that they have been slow to confirm judges all along.
This whole time, exactly.
The whole time, and so that this is a continued part of a pattern that they've already established, and as a matter of fact, that there are lower court judges that are, you know, waiting to be confirmed in cases that are backing up so justice isn't being served because of their ongoing obstructionism.
I wanted to use the phrase cycle of fuckery. Like, I was waiting for
yeah, but that press conference was beautiful and just, you know, it just clarified and reminded everyone, you know, that this is how you take the high road and this is how you remind people that the White House is where the adults live. And I invite you all to join me at the adults table. And it was just beautiful. Yep, that's it.
Didn't he say something about it's not a reality show?
He did. He was like, you know, being a president is not a talk show host. It's not being a reality show host. You know, you have to make hard decisions. Our standing matters internationally. And sometimes you make unpopular decisions, but that's a part of the job. It's not about, you know, simply about the marketing, you know, that it's real work. And so the American people are going to be looking for someone to actually be serious. And so even though somebody might express your sentiments, you know, when we get down to the real voting, people are going to remember that this is an actual job with real consequences, and they're going to choose accordingly.
And you can't brandish your gun on Twitter and hashtag.
Hey,
Jeb Bush,
hey.
What in the world?
What the fuck?
Listen.
I had to go look at that.
So America.
You guys saw a gun. I saw the engraving because I like a monogram.
You are from Detroit, so that is only.
Well, nobody in Detroit would engrave their gun because crime. They commit crimes. You know, so but this just the idea of an engraved gun. I was like, why didn't I think of that?
He put an angle to it, a filter, like a hashtag, like who
haters
does,
gonna hate. Haters gonna hate.
Does that? Anyway, that's but it just it's the stark contrast between being presidential and that. Like I just
But people he's giving the knuckle draggers exactly what they want. Because think about it. So when stupid people talk, other stupid people typically agree with them. And in this case, a lot of people do agree with, like, the casual use of the gun, the thinly veiled racist messages of Donald Trump, because not only are these men speaking their language, dumb people like to think they're smarter than they are. So if the rich people are speaking my language as a dumb person, maybe I'm not as dumb as I thought I was. And maybe, I can be rich like them one day.
I was just waiting for Twitter to suspend his account because I know we all reported him as spam. So, like,
yeah. Maybe this will work because he's still polling in single digits, although he actually looked pretty decent in the most recent debate. But yeah, he's not doing well. So I guess whatever you got to do to make yourself look like you're appealing,
all right.
I guess.
Meanwhile, our black president showed black excellence. Not falling for the
Are we gonna do cheers tonight? Because I there's a slight echo too. Are we gonna do cheers tonight or no? Because I'll hold off this one then.
Do you have another one?
Well, I have an idea, and this Cam Newton. That's the beginning and the end. Hard stop. I mean, that's all I got. Cam Newton.
Yes, I think like that. Yeah, he's just black. Yeah, black excellence. Like,
And unapologetic. You know what? Who said that your way is the right way? Excellence. And that is a question I wish more people would ask. Who said your way of losing or your way of winning is the right way?
Right.
And you can't say that, oh, my way of winning or losing breaks the rules, because I'm about to give you bullet points of other people who won and lost in similar manners, and it was okay when they did it.
And even if I did break the rules, okay.
Right.
You know, so what? Like, yeah. But Cam, I agree. Like, we don't even have to, like, go into a huge thing on Cam. Cam just is Cam. Black excellence. So, yeah. I guess my last one. I guess I can combine it. I'm going to say the blackout takeover of, like, the Super Bowl and the Grammys. Well, first I want to give, like, a special shout-out to Brittany Howard and the Alabama Shakes for winning their – I think they won 3 Grammys yesterday. It was, like, black Best Alternative Music for their second album Sound and Color, and then Best Rock Performance and Best Rock Song for Don't Want to Fight. And they also she was performing looking like she was in Solange's wedding with the white that she had on. So just, you know, shout out to them. But of course everybody was talking about you know, Kendrick Lamar's performance, where he took us from like the prison industrial complex to Mother Africa and then ended with Compton in the middle of Africa, you know, and just, I mean, and it wasn't just the black excellence. It was the fact that, you know, we talked, I think, an episode or two ago about the Oscars and our shutout, you know, and, you know, whatever. And to see Beyonce come into the Super Bowl and see Kendrick, you know, do the Grammys like this, and then to see the faces of Caucasian dismay, like, it's just...
But you know, the thing is with that, so I have not today, I was busy, actually busy at work, I have not seen any white tear laced think pieces about Kendrick, but these people who do have issues with Beyonce, with Kendrick, with anything black, presented on such a large stage, that do they understand that these people had dress rehearsals?
Right.
That, you know, Beyonce wouldn't have been able to stage all that if the producers of the show and the staging people and the NFL weren't okay with it. Kendrick wouldn't have been able to put, he didn't unfurl that Africa and with the lighting on his own, like, right. Secret. They rehearsed that.
It wasn't they a knew. Secret. They knew.
Yeah.
They knew. So, yeah, I, you know, that's just, it's, it was almost like when D'Angelo and the Vanguard did their SNL performance, and they had, like, the chalk outline of, you know, like a police victim on Saturday night. Like, it took me back to last year when he did, he did that on February 1st. He brought in Black History Month doing that, you know, for Saturday Night Live. So it was just, you know, to see them doing that, like, that just warmed my heart. So that was just more, you know, black excellence for me.
Ooh, and speaking of, speaking of Saturday Night Live, I'm sure everybody has seen the day Beyonce turned black.
Jesus, yes.
SNL skit. Yeah. And I don't know who wrote it. I wish I did. But I'm just going to assume that somehow the two women black writers had something to do with it. I'm just going to assume that. And if it's wrong, I don't really care.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought that was awesome, too. And the reaction was accurate. Like, if you looked at social media, like, that reaction was so accurate. But I guess we're coming up on the end of the show, and we can actually do cheers. I know this episode was pretty much all cheers. But... Buddha, is she still there? Buddha, you there? Uh-oh. I don't think she's there.
Sound like it.
She just dropped off and came back on. Smart, go ahead and do your cheers while Buddha comes back on.
Okay, so I'm not sure if everyone is aware, but the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition recently came out. And in Sports Illustrated, well, one of the covers is Ronda Rousey, some skinny white chick, and then this other white chick who's a size 14. Now, I'm not a size 14. Okay, I'm still in single digits, but I can easily say that the bigger girl looks better. She looks like someone who is healthy, someone who won't break, and someone who might, you know, just be, like I said, healthy, you know. But also in that is, the issue is a black plus size model. Her name is Precious Victoria Lee. She was also the darker brown girl, darker black girl in the Lane Bryant ad. There is a piece on her on Elle.com this month. And she happens to be one of my dear friends' little sister. She also was the black model. Like if you go to, I believe it's Nordstrom, like their plus size. I don't know if she still does it, but some years ago she was like the black girl. She is from a line of models, actually. I've known her since she was, my gosh, she's got to be maybe 13 years old. But at any rate, she is lovely. She is out there doing big things. She is an HBCU grad. You know, she is not embarrassed about her blackness. She is aiming or looking to get into the cosmetics and beauty industry because, as she said in the article, there is no reason. Like, the excuse for fashion was, oh, sample sizes, which is bullshit, by the way. There is no excuse as to why we don't have plus size or, excuse me, healthy-looking women in beauty ads, in makeup ads. There's no real reason.
None with
it's them. Not lighting, it's none of those things. So hopefully that will be where she takes it, but she is absolutely gorgeous, lovely girl from Atlanta. So ooh. Yes, Precious Victoria Lee, and I use her middle name because in the Lane Bryant ad she went by Victoria.
Yeah, so
that's my fear.
Gorgeous. I was, as I told you earlier today, I was wondering if that was her when I saw her the L article, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, is that her? But then I didn't know. So yeah, cheers definitely to her. Mm-hmm. Where can they find you?
I can be reached at think_P_smart on the Twitter. And that's really it. I'm tired. I don't do a lot online like that.
Yeah, we need you to blog again or something.
You know, I keep threatening to like repost some of my old blogs, but then I lose interest.
Attention span.
Yes.
Buddha, you back?
I am.
You got some cheers for us?
I do. It actually, it was kind of a piggyback because I still actually had another black excellence, but I'll kind of wrap it all together. For one, back to the Grammys. It's funny because people were talking about, you know, despite the fact that there were some great moments, that overall it was kind of a snooze fest. This is what I saw quoted on Twitter a few different times. I wasn't watching, so I don't know. But I just thought it was notable, and people made comments about the fact that Nicki, Rihanna, nor Beyonce performed, and I was like, oh, y'all were just missing Black Girl Magic. That was part of what happened.
Right.
Maybe it was missing some of that extraordinary black excellence.
And Lauryn Hill ain't show up like we... She was late.
She came to practice.
And I also wanted to give an honorable mention. First of all, I wanted to give a shout out to Kendrick. I didn't watch his performance yet, but I heard it was awesome. But related to that, I wanted to give an honorable mention to Hamilton as brown and black excellence, because mm-hmm. I've been listening to this soundtrack for several weeks. It's amazing, and I haven't had a chance to watch the Grammys performance yet, but Twitter pretty much fell out about how amazing it was, so that was my honorable mention. But I wanted to give cheers to D'Angelo for winning Best R&B Album for The Black Messiah, which was awesome. I loved that album. That was the first concert I've been to in a forever long time, and it was a great show. And at the time, I gave cheers to Kendra Foster, and I want to give her cheers again because she also won a Grammy. She took home the trophy for a Best R&B Song for Really Love, which is on that album. She co-wrote it with D'Angelo, and she is a FAMUan, You Go Girl, native Tallahassean.
Strike again.
Yeah. So just a lot of awesomeness going on. I'm excited to see people be fantastic and fabulous and awesome. And I love the fists that we have for the multicolored fists that we have for Twitter on Black History Month with the BHM tag. So it's just been a fun time, and I hope that we continue that. But you can catch me on Twitter at NDCHARP, that's NDC harp, like the instrument, or you can catch my blog. I actually have a new post up and hope to have more coming soon at cocostudio.com, that's COCO studio singular, cocostudio.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, like I said earlier, this entire episode has kind of been a cheers of sorts. But I wanted to give special cheers to, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I don't know if it's Devon or Devin Franklin and Megan Good, who have been touring and promoting their book, The Weight, A Powerful Practice for Finding the Love of Your Life and the Life That You Love. And I had never really paid attention to their relationship and marriage outside of, I remember when they first got married, there were people who had snide remarks about them choosing celibacy because they were similar to like Sierra and Russell Wilson, you know, whatever. Especially with him being a pastor and her being an actress, like a woman of the world, or, you know, whatever. But at any rate, they visited a church on Valentine's Day, and a woman in the audience stood up to give a comment. And I'm going to read the comment. But it's something where you need to go back and watch the video. She starts off saying a bunch of other stuff, but then she says, "This is not offensive," which if anybody prefaces their statement with "this is not offensive," they're about to be offensive. Mm-hmm, but she says, "But I was at the grocery store and I looked at a newsstand and saw you and you had your breasts showing. So I wasn't going to come here. I wasn't, but the Lord brought me here to see you." Mm-hmm. She's talking to Megan. She says, "You're beautiful. You are a beautiful young woman, and your testimony is awesome. It's awesome. Amen. Amen. The Lord let me come and push past the judgment, because you have to make sure that what you say and what you do match up. You understand?" Then she says, "So we're going to cover up, right?" That's what she says to Megan. So Devin immediately, like, jumped to the defense of his wife. Like, he was like, "You know, that's not what we're here for. She's not going to cover up. She's going to wear what she wants to wear in the name of Jesus. Amen, amen. You know, God bless you. We love you, but we're not going to do that here." But it was the way, and like I said, what I'm quoting doesn't do the video justice, because Megan also started crying on stage. And his body language, he immediately went into like protector mode. And the way he did it was flawless. It was calm. It was intentional. It was deliberate without being misogynistic. Like, you know how Kanye claps back over Kim and then goes too far, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. He wasn't like that. He just simply covered her in strength and power. But and I also would be remiss if I didn't add that Megan herself, she responded by addressing the woman. And instead of being like dismissive or even, I don't know, ashamed or whatever, she just said, "You know what, if you have a problem for me, pray for me, and I'll also pray for you." And so, you know, like I said, I never paid attention to them as a unit before, but they won me over today. So, you know, cheers to them, because that was just, that whole exchange was greatness. Mm-hmm. But you can find me on Twitter at SOJOXOXO. That's SOJOXOXO. My website is phenomenal.com, phyinomenal.com. You can also follow the hashtag selfcareis, where a lot of you and myself are tweeting our best self-care practices, selfcareis. And you guys can also find us collectively. If you Google Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine, you'll find us everywhere. We've taken over that phrase. Our website is whiskeywineandmoonshine.com. We're on Facebook. Our Twitter is Whiskey, Wine, Moon. We're on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Podomatic, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, you know, and all that good stuff. And definitely let us know, like, tweet us. What are you seeing as Black excellence, you know, moments this year that you want to give shouts out to? Because we'll retweet them, because we definitely like to keep the party going.
It's true.
Yeah. So this has been fun. I guess we'll see you guys next time. Cheers.
Cheers.